This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 7:36 a.m. Wednesday, the 9th of September. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill where, Roshan, you'll be speaking with the Managing Director of CrowdStrike Asia, Jagdish Mahapatra.
Yep, it's in this age of rapid digitalization, cybersecurity has become a much more pivotal question for governments and companies around the world. Now, CrowdStrike is a NASDAQ-listed cloud-based cybersecurity player and has seen a lot of stock price movement over the last few months on this optimism. Now, it's only got 9% of revenue derived from Asia. So today, I'll be speaking to Jagdish about the plans to expand in the region and their presence in Malaysia. I'm quite curious to know how they are in the country right now.
All right. And if you're also curious to know what they're up to here in Malaysia, you can tune in later on after the 8 o'clock news bulletin for the breakfast grill. But right now, we are taking a look at the Chinese economy, which has continued to rebound if we go by the latest trade data. Chinese authorities reported that dollar-denominated exports in August grew by 9.5% compared to a year ago, also outpacing export growth in July, which was 7.2%.
However, what's interesting is that dollar-denominated imports dropped by 2% compared to a year ago. So I'm wondering whether this is a sign of what is to come, whether the economy is slowing down in the next quarter. Anyway, China's trade surplus with the US actually widened to some $34 billion in August from $32 billion in July. So needless to say, President Donald Trump isn't really happy about this and apparently has recently raised the prospect of the US decoupling from China, which economists refer to a potential permanent drop in trade between the two countries.
Yeah. I guess it's an outcome that neither country can actually afford, right? Especially considering the global trade situation as it is and the economics coming from the pandemic. President Xi Jinping appears to be hedging his bets by launching a policy of dual circulation strategy to boost domestic commerce and be less reliant on foreign companies. So, fancy term there. I wonder what it means.
Indeed. And so to get us a better understanding of what the economic indicators mean and how China's looking to boost their domestic consumption, we have on the line with us this morning Gary Ng, Asia-Pacific economist at Natixis. Gary, thank you for joining us. Now, China reported robust trade data for the month of August. What does this tell us about its economic recovery path?
Good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to be on this program this morning. So the China trade data in August really tell us that there is indeed some sort of economic recovery happening. However, there's also some turbulences ahead as well. The export data has indeed beaten market expectation and grew at an even faster pace. The most obvious factor to drive this number up and down is really, of course, the performance of trading partners. In 2020, the key driver is actually ASEAN, with US and Europe being a bit weaker. As the worst time is probably over for global demand in Q2 2020, the external environment should continue to improve so that export numbers should continue to improve as well. So I think basically it means that on the export side of the Chinese economy, it is indeed going to bring some helpful catalyst to the general growth for China.
While exports improved, why did imports decline year on year?
I think for the import side, it really shows this divergence between some of the indicators such as industrial production and fixed asset investment, of which these indicators are often more related to government support. However, on the other hand, on private consumption or retail sales, we can see that consumer and private firms are still quite hesitant to use their money to consume or further invest. And if we look further into the breakdown of what are actually driving the import, we see that the first is really iron ore and other material. And this is really a reflection of some of the infra investment supported by government again. And the other is really semiconductor, of which a lot of Chinese firms are rushing to import more before the supply chain is shut off by the US. So if we really exclude this product, the export, the import picture will be much worse. So therefore, I think these two together means that the growth in China for 2020 will be supported by investment rather than trade and consumption. And the economy is likely to grow at 2.2%. Full year in 2020.
So, Gary, President Xi Jinping has been pushing for a dual circulation strategy in a bid to boost domestic commerce. What does this strategy mean for global trade integration?
I think this strategy is fundamentally quite similar to the past, but with an even stronger emphasis of some of the domestic fielded growth. So the key goal of this strategy is really to expand domestic demand and also to move up in the supply chain and also reduce the dependence on the overseas market. So I think going forward, it is likely to be increasingly a more polarized world with two systems. We will probably see that there will be more production in China for sales in China, while the world may be more a separate market.
Now, speaking of polarization, Gary, the trade surplus between the US and China has actually widened despite China's pledge earlier this year to buy more US products. Is this an indication that China is not perhaps keeping to its word?
I think on the one hand, indeed, commodity price has fallen quite a bit, and then we can see that the domestic economy in China has been disrupted. So at this juncture, it's quite difficult for China to fully fulfill the goal, and also there may be some production halt in the US. So it's a bit hard to say that China is not keeping its words right now. And I think eventually it all depends on whether Washington and Beijing would negotiate and delay the implementation. But definitely it is indeed another layer of uncertainties if the US want to use this as an excuse in this already quite intense US-China relationship.
I want to circle back to the dual circulation strategy, and given rising tension, the trade tensions between US and China, how would it affect Southeast Asian markets like Malaysia that export a lot to China?
I think an example to look into this will be, for example, we see that in 2020, there is a massive surge in the export of iron ore, let's say from Australia into China. And even though there is quite a tense geopolitical tensions between the two countries, this trade actually goes on. So basically, it means that for things that China need external input, China needs to buy it anyway. So for Malaysia, I believe that China will continue to purchase for key items such as mineral fuels and plastic, and the cheaper labor costs will continue to drive some of the Chinese firms and also the FDI from China into Malaysia to actually set up factory to sell to the world. However, I think in the medium run, China will try to produce any product possible domestically, especially if technology play an even greater factor in the future that if labor cost is not that important in the future. So I think on the raw material side, I wouldn't be too worried. However, for some of the other sectors that mainly probably rely more on labor costs, there may be further challenges ahead.
Gary, we're seeing increasing tensions between the US and China. And most recently, I think that we saw SMIC possibly being added to that blacklist. How are these sanctions and restrictions on Chinese companies? Are you anticipating more from the Trump administration as we head into the elections?
I think it is quite likely to see more this, I would say, tough measures from the Trump administration on China going forward. However, it is hard to expect a fully, total export ban into China. But indeed, there will be a stronger focus on, I would say, technology and infrastructure. And for tech, it is really all about semiconductor chips. So it is quite likely to see that the list of the sanctioned entity will expand, and also the strength of the sanctions will also increase as well. As we all know, the US is really at the upper supply chain with quite a key influence in a very high market share in equipment and software. So basically, it is quite difficult for China to detach and then rebuild the whole supply chain and move up the technological ladder in one day. And on the other hand, finance may be another aspect to look for. However, I think any move will be more targeted to individuals like personnel or individual institution. But this is definitely going to bring more uncertainties before November.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Gary. That was Gary Ng, Asia-Pacific economist at Natixis, talking to us about the Chinese economy following the publication of their trade data. I think he makes a good point there. That is that, despite China's ambitions of being self-sustaining are going to be difficult, considering that they can't be self-sustaining and also move up the technological value chain in just one day. But I think this reminds me very much of the conversation that we had had with Jack Kuzi over SMIC yesterday, and the fact that in the long term he's still bullish on the stock because of these ambitions for China to be self-sustaining.
Yeah, so I think right now in the short term, consumers are still not back in full force. The consumers in China, so retail sales numbers are still bearish. However, the economy is being propped up by the government and some industrial production and asset investments. But I think in the long term, I think really for Malaysia is that China will produce what it can if the technology they develop and the labour cost differential is not great. So I think it's something Malaysia needs to be mindful about. But on, maybe on the raw material side, we'll still be okay.
And also how the pandemic affects the supply chains across the globe, right? Whether we see more fragmentation, and with that, China's presence in the region becomes stronger, or those countries like Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia, where we see more manufacturing start fragmenting across the world. That's something to pay attention to as well.
All right, and next we're going to be zooming in to the subject of redevelopment in KL, speaking to Nick Nazmi. Nick Ahmad, Member of Parliament for Sathya Wangsa, and that's happening after these messages. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.